All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Nun Tes 59. We are picking up Mamish, last couple of words on Nun Ches Amud Beis 58b. My Tia. So the Gemara, remember again, the Braises spoke about if an animal ingests Tia. So what's Tia? Remember again, Shasam Ayim Ram, Helita Tia, Chilsas Pilblum Achos Sam Kshira. Ultimately, if the animal ingests this Tia, the animal is still kosher. What's Tia? Amar Rav Yehuda, top of Nuntes, Ikra Dimirarisa, some type of very bitter root. So again, even though again this bitter root is somewhat harmful, the ingestion of it does not make the animal a trefa. Amar Rav Yehuda, Haiman da Achal. So this is actually very interesting. Rav Yehuda says, Haiman da Achal, a person who ate Tilsa Tikli Chilsis, a person who goes ahead and eats. And ate 3 tikla, right? It's an amount, 3 tikli of chilsis, aliba rekana, on an empty stomach, mishtalach mashche, his skin will fall off him. Which we'll say is another way of saying, it's not good for you. It's not good for you, right? So a person that eats chilsa on an empty stomach, a lot of chilsa on an empty stomach, mamish, his skin falls off him. Rashi says, mishtalach mashche, nifshat oro, his skin peels off. Shachilsis mechamamaso ma'od vachsoso kadachas. Apparently, chilsis drives up your body temperature to very high degrees, gives you a fever, ultimately, again, and it causes the skin to peel, to shed. I'm going to be a vow. Bididi hava ovdo. Rabbi Avo says, I want to tell you something. This happened to me. Va'achli chad tikla chilsis, and I only ate 1 tikla chilsis. Ve'i lo dias yomaya mishtalach mashchai. And if it were not the fact that there was a pool of cold water right next to me, my skin would have fallen off. V'kiyamti ba'atzmi, and I said to myself, ha'chachma tichya ba'aleha. That ultimately, again, wisdom will go ahead and save its owner. So what does that mean? That ultimately, again, he was wise enough ultimately to understand that it was the Tilsa that did this to him, and wise enough also to know that it was a pool of cold water that saved his life. Amar Rav Yosef, Haiman the Achal Shitsar Bi. So listen to this. Now we're talking about like lethal culinary combinations, right? So listen to this. So Rav Yosef says, a person who eats Haiman the Achal Shitsar Bi, a person who eats 40 eggs, va'arboy amagozi, 16 eggs, arboy amagozi, 40 nuts, v'shev botisa de parchi. And ultimately, again, and it will say, seven caper berries, berries from a caper bush. V'shasi revi'asa de dovsha, and he drinks a revi'as of honey. Bitikufas tamuz, during the summer. Aliba rekana, on an empty stomach, misaker talya delibe. Literally, it was like his heart falls out of his chest. In other words, not good for you. So first of all, anytime you're eating 40 eggs, it can't be good, right? Even leaving aside the other stuff. But again, the idea is that this combination, the Gemara says, is quite. It literally will say, misaker talya delibe means literally the heartstring will snap. Okay, so what it means is it's a lethal combination. Hahu bartavia. So the Gemara goes back to animals. Hahu bartavia, the asla be reishkalusa. There was a young deer that came to the house of the reishkalusa. Havi mafsik kar'an basraisa. Its hind legs were missing. So the shaila was now, is this animal kosher, treif? Bad ke rav b'tzomes hagidin v'achshirei. So rav checked the tzomes hagidin. Also remember again, the tzomes hagidin is the area where the 16 sinews kind of come together, coalesce right by the bottom of the tibia. So remember we spoke about this before. So rav checked the tzomes hagidin v'achshirei, and he declared the animal to be kosher. Savar l'mechol minei b'umtso, he wanted to eat some of the meat. Umtsa means enotzli kol kach. What do they call it? Rare, right? He wanted to eat some of the meat rare. Rashi says elamolch umaod v'tzolei kol duag al gachav. So he was going to eat some of the meat rare. Now we'll say in order to eat meat rare, what you do in halacha is, because remember you have a blood issue, you salt it heavily. If you salt it heavily, that extracts the blood. Cook it over an open fire, and you could eat your meat medium. Well, not even medium rare, but rare. Amrli Shmuel. So Shmuel said to the Reish Kalusa, he said to him, Rav said, Shmuel said to Rav, excuse me, I'm really Shmuel, lo chayishmar linikuri, so Rebbe, are you not concerned? Ultimately, again, linikuri also means that it was bitten. Rashi says, linikuri, shema nishcha nachash sham, v'osem mishum sakhanas nafashas. Are you not concerned that maybe the snake had some kind of snake, that maybe the animal had some type of snake bite, and there's some type of venom inside of the animal? There was, in general, even if there's venom inside the animal, if you go ahead and you cook it off, you'll be fine. If it's rare, there's a concern that the venom may still be present. Amalei, my takanta. So he said to him, what do you think? What would be the right way to go ahead and take care of this meat? So no sve bitanura, di'ihu badik nafshe. The easiest way is roast it in an oven. Roast it in an oven. Because if the animal indeed is infected with venom, you'll see the effects of the venom while it's roasting in the oven. Osve, sure enough, they put the deer meat in the oven. Nafal tilchi tilchi. The meat began to dissolve. So apparently the intense heat of the oven caused the meat to dissolve. Now, why did the meat dissolve? Apparently because of the presence of the snake venom. So Kari Shmuel Aleid Rav, Shmuel, so essentially, Rav saved Shmuel's life. Or I should say, excuse me, Shmuel said Rav's life. Kari Shmuel Aleid Rav, lo yu'una letzadeh kolavin. So Shmuel said about Rav, that you see, nothing terrible will ever happen to the tzaddik. So Shmuel says, you see that Rav was saved, chas v'shalom, from ingesting this poisonous meat. Kari Rav alei de Shmuel, and Rav said about Shmuel, kol raz lo anas lach. No secret is withheld from you. So it says, very beautiful. So remember again, so Shmuel sees that Rav is such a tzaddik that he saved from this calamity. Rav sees that Shmuel is so incredibly wise that he understands things in a different light. Okay, good. Beautiful. Says the Mishnah. Simani behema v'chaya, neru min ha-tarbo. Says the Mishnah says as follows. The simanim of a kosher, behema and chaya, are said in the Torah. Right? Mafra says parsa, shosa'as shesa, ultimately against split hooves, choose its cud. That's mentioned explicitly in Torah. V'simani ha'of, lo ne'emru. Now, listen, interestingly enough, the simanim of a kosher bird are actually not mentioned in the Torah, which is actually quite interesting. What we have in the Torah Bosei is what? The Torah tells us which types of birds are kosher and which types of birds are not. From that, we glean characteristics. But there is no explicit statement, these birds are kosher, these birds are not. Amru chachamim, but the rabbi said, kol of hadores tameh. Any predatory bird is tameh. Koshi yeshlo etzba yisera, any bird that has an extra toe, vizefek, and it's vizefek will say is the gizzard, vikor, or the crop, excuse me, vikor kabano, or its gizzard, niklof, will say that means the gizzard, the layer of the gizzard can be peeled, those animals are kosher, right? Those animals are tahar. Those birds, Rabbi Ozer Sadak Omer, kol of hacholik is ragalof tame. But it's actually very interesting. Rabbi Ozer says, any bird that literally divides its feet. So what this is referring to, as we're going to see, is a bird that on its foot has two claws in front, two claws in back. The way you're able to see that is when it grabs on, let's say, to a branch. Right? How does it support itself on the branch? If there are two toes on the front, two toes on the back, that animal is not kosher. What's the reason for that, Rabbi Osai? Because that's the simon of predatory birds. That's the simon of predatory birds. Ubechagavim, when it comes to grasshoppers, what type of grasshoppers are kosher? Kol sheyishlo arba raglaim. Any grasshopper that has four legs. Va'arba knafayim. Four wings, right? The kartsulim. We'll say kartsulim ultimately, again, literally are hopping legs, right? Legs that are meant ultimately, again, for the grasshopper to hop around. Uknafav chopines rubo. And its wings cover the majority of its body. Rabbi Yossi or Yossi says, v'shmo chagov. And it's known as a grasshopper. In other words, that's the designation it has as a chagov. Ubedogim, what about fish? Koshi yishno snapir v'kaskasas. Anything that has fins and scales. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shnei kaskasin v'snapir echad. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, we'll discuss what this means. Two kaskasin and one snapir. Ve'eluhin kaskasin. Ha'kvuin bo. I will say, what are kaskasin? Those are the scales that are embedded on the animal. U'snapirin. And I will say, what's the snapir? haporeach bahen, that which the animal uses to swim with, i.e. its fins. Good, says the Gemara. I will say it's interesting, by the way. You know, the title of this parak is Eila Trefus. We've spent all of this time discussing, like, what's wrong with animals, right? And now, interesting, just sometimes the Gemara just follows this interesting order. One would have thought that a Mishnah like this would have been at the beginning of the Masechta, or at the beginning of this section, right? Okay, good. We'll see why it's here. Tan Rabbanan. Elohim Simanim Behema. I will say these are the Simanim of a kosher animal. But this is actually very interesting. So kol behema mafreses parsa. So kol behema shema'ala gira. So we'll say any animal that has split hooves. Furthermore, any animal that chews its cud. So listen to this. Kol behema shema'ala gira. Any animal that chews its cud. Biadua she'im la shinayim lemala. Utahora. But this is actually very interesting. Mark's telling me an interesting principle. Any animal which chews its cuds does not have upper teeth. Does not have upper teeth, right? Does not have upper teeth, meaning towards the front of its jaw. And therefore, again, it's kosher. The Gemara says, Uklolohu. Is that true? Is that true that any animal that chews its cud does not have upper teeth? Vahari gamal. What about the camel? Dema'ala gerehu. We'll say a camel actually chews its cud. Ve'ein lo shinayim lamala. Now, we'll say, now, what we're really saying is as follows. Any animal that chews its cud and does not have upper teeth is kosher. Now, both say, we're going to see the reason why this is very important later on is why. What happens if you find only a part of an animal? And the part of it, you find the jaw. And the jaw does not have upper teeth. Well, if you're telling me that any animal that does not have upper teeth chews its cud, that means that what? Based on identifying an animal by its dental records, right, I can go ahead and assume that it's kosher. To which the Gemara says, is that true? Look at the camel. The camel chews its cud, and therefore, again, does not have upper teeth, yet we know the camel is not kosher. Why isn't the camel kosher? It does not have split hooves. So your klal is wrong. So the Gemara says, Vitame, and a camel is not kosher. To which the Gemara says, no, nivi islay. But we'll say a camel does have nivi. Literal translation is, I think, like molars, right? The camel does have some basic teeth in its mouth. It doesn't have a full front of mouth filled with teeth, but it does have some basic teeth. I have a hari ben gamal, but a young camel. The nivi nami leslay. But we'll say a young camel doesn't even have those molars. So the point is, you have a young camel that doesn't have molars, does chew its cud, it has no teeth, does chew its cud, yet the animal is not kosher. So your principle is incorrect. So the Gemara says, furthermore, Hari Shafan Va'arneves. So we'll say, we're going to discuss these definitions. We often translate Shafan and Arneves as animals in the rabbit hare family. So we'll discuss what they are in greater depth. Dema'ala Gerehen. We'll say, they do chew their cud. V'yesh lahen shinayin lamala. And they do have upper teeth. Utimeyin, and ultimately their tummy. So I'll say, all we're doing over here is we're attacking the principle. You told me that any animal that chews its cud does not have upper teeth. I'm telling you, it's not true. It's not true. Here are real life examples. The Gemara says, Va'od, Shinai Miksiba Raisa. Furthermore, again, why are you even bringing up teeth? The Torah, when it discusses the simanim of a kosher animal, makes no mention of teeth. What does it make mention of? Right? Makes mention ultimately again of chewing its cud and split hooves, that's all. To which the Gemara says, Al-Hachi Kamar, this is what it means to say. Kol behema she'in lo shinayim lamala. So say any animal which does not have teeth on the upper part of its jaw. Right? Biyadua shehu ma'ala gira mafreses parsa utahora. I know, we can say with absolute certainty that what? That ultimately it chews its cud, it has split hooves, and it is kosher. I believe dog be parasosel. Says the Gemara, I don't understand. Why do you need to rely on principles like this? Just check. To which the Gemara says, Kigon shahayu parasosel chatuchos. Because what we're dealing over here is with an animal that lacks the other identifying symbols. For example, the hooves were cut off. Those were cut off. So the Gemara says, Ukid rav chista, dom rav chista. Listen to this incredible case. A person was walking in the desert. And we'll say, what happens? He finds an animal, and the hooves are cut off. So we'll say, but yet, I'm hungry. I'm in the desert. And what happens? What do you do? Check the animal's mouth. If it doesn't have upper, teeth, then the adua shehi tahora. Then ultimately, again, I know that it's tar. So the absence of upper teeth tells me that this animal chews its cud and has split hooves. Ve'im lav. But ultimately, again, if not, in other words, if the animal does have teeth, bi'adua shehi tameya. Ultimately, again, it is tamei. Obilvad shiyakir gamal. But I will say this is true as long as what? You know what camels look like. In other words, I will say what you do have to be able to do is to be able to ascertain that this animal is not a camel. So the Gemara says because camels are the exception to this rule, right? Camels ultimately, again, don't have front teeth, do chew their cud, but don't have split hooves. So as long as you can say with absolute certainty that this is not a camel, you're good to go. So the Gemara says, Vachi yak your gamo. Gamo, novel is isme. What are you talking about? Camels do have teeth. They have those little molars. Elo ubilvach yakir ben gamo. Right? Ultimately, again, rather what it means is, as long as you can recognize a young camel. Because that's the only concern you'd have to run into, that maybe this animal ultimately is a young camel. So the Gemara says, Lav amrit ika ben gamo. Ika nami mina achrina de dami le ben gamo. So it says the Gemara, well, once you acknowledge that there is an exception to this rule, the ben gamo, right? The ben gamo does not have teeth, right? Chews its cud, but yet does not have split hooves. So maybe there are other exceptions to this rule as well. To which the Gemara says, lo. No, I'm telling you, the young camel is the only exception to this rule. How do I know this? Saka daitcha, ditani di berei bishmal, ve'es hagamal, ki ma'ala geirahu. So as you remember again, what does the pasuk say? Achezelo tochlu mi ma'ale agir mefresi ha'parsa. Es hagamal, ki ma'ala geirahu, umafris, Uparsa inonena mafris. Well, listen to this. What does the Torah say? You have to eat animals that have split hooves and chew their cud, but you can't eat the camel. Why? Because even though it chews its cud, it doesn't have a split hoof. So we'll say, what does the Torah Kedosha do? The Torah singles out the camel. The camel is singled out. Why is the camel singled out? Because, listen to this, Shalit ba'olamo yodea she'in lecha davar shema alagira v'tame ela gamo. Because they both say, the Ribbono Sha'olam, who is in charge of his world, knows that there is only one animal on the face of this entire planet that chews its cud and does not have split hooves. And what is that? That is the camel. Lefichach parat bo hakasuf. Therefore, ultimately, again, the Torah goes out of its way to identify it. So we'll say, so again, second wide line in Tesla Medallah, of the intermediate lines. So we'll say, so remember again, the Gemara just says something very dramatically amazing. If I'm walking in the desert, I come across an animal. I'm hungry, but the animal's hooves are cut off. And I want to know, can I eat it or not? What do I need to do? Check its mouth, carefully, right? Check its mouth. So we'll say, right, if there are no teeth, I'm good to go. As long as what? I know what a camel looks like. Or it's in order that I can be absolutely sure that this animal is not a camel, then as long as that animal does not have teeth, that is an indication that halacha l'maisa, this animal has split hooves, chews its cud, and the animal is kosher. Next case, Omer Rav Chista, Hayim Halech Maderach, I was traveling. Umatza behema shepia gomin. I'm listen to this case. In this case, the animal's mouth, going literally means like destroyed or mutilated. I can't check the teeth of the animal. So what happens? Ubodek the parasosel. I check the hooves. In parasosel sedugos, if the hooves are split, biadua shehi tahora, then I can know for sure the animal is tar. Vim lav, I will say if not, biadua shehi tmea. So I do a hoof check. As long as the hoof check comes back okay, split hooves, the animal is kosher. So we'll say what the Gemara thing over here is as follows. Essentially, there is no such thing as an animal that has split hooves that doesn't chew its cud. If it has split hooves, it chews its cud. Therefore, a hoof check is enough to go ahead and ensure that the animal is kosher. But there's one caveat. Ubilvad sheyakir chazer. Chazer, right? Or we'll say, as long as what? As long as you know what a chazer looks like. I mean, the one that walks on four legs, right? As long as you know what a chazer looks like. So we'll say, why? Because a chazer is the one exception to this. A chazer, I will say, a pig, is an animal which has split hooves but does not chew its cud. So as long as you know what a chazer looks like, hoof identification is enough to permit the animal. To which the Gemara says, 1 second. Lav amret ika chazer, ika nami mina achrina de dami le chazer. I don't understand. Maybe there are other animals. How do you know the chazer is the only animal on the face of the earth that has split hooves and doesn't chew its cud? Maybe there's another animal also that has split hooves and chews its cud and does not chew its cud. Therefore, hoof identification is not enough to ascertain the kasher status of the animal. Listen to this. The S ha-chazir ki mafris parsuhu. Both the Torah goes out of its way to say, and the chazer, even though it has split hooves, it doesn't chew its cud, and it's not kosher. Shalit ba'olam yodei she'en l'chad davar she'mafris parsuhu v'tamei el ha-chazir. L'fichach parat bo ha-kasef hu. So both listen to this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows his world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that there is no other animal in this world besides the chazer that has split hooves and does not chew its cud. Therefore, the Torah goes out of its way to identify the chazer. And therefore, Allah Kalamaisa, if you are traveling and you come across an animal and you can't identify it by its dental records, you can go ahead and use hoof identification. And as long as it has split hooves and you know that it's not a chazer because you know what a chazer looks like, then Allah Kalamaisa, that's enough to ascertain the kosher status of the animal. Beautiful. So the Gemara goes by. Devam Rav Chista, another case. Hayim Halich B'midbar. The takeaway message is when you travel, bring food with you, right? When you travel, bring stuff. Person's traveling in the desert, and he finds an animal again whose mouth is destroyed, or the mouth is mutilated. The idea is you cannot identify the animal through its teeth or lack thereof. Now watch this. So this animal, its mouth is mutilated, and its hoofs are cut off. So again, right, you might want to pass on this one in general. But again, you're hungry. So what happens? You have to understand something. You know, we live in such different times. We could pass on a lot of things. So I was talking about a different reality. So what do you do, boss? I don't know if the animal is kosher or not. I'm sorry? It's alive. So it has to be alive, right? Otherwise, if it's not alive, the truth is, You could come to potential cases ultimately again where maybe you saw it shechted by someone, because remember again, but yes, this animal is alive. You're going to shecht it. So let's say what happens. So what do you do with it? Bodik bibsara. So let's say you go ahead and you check its meat, right? So the Gemara says, Psara literally means meat. What we're really going to see is, what you're really checking over here is the muscle, right? We're going to be checking the muscle pattern, as we're going to see in just a moment. If the muscle pattern has a crisscross pattern, then you know this animal is kosher. And if not, you know that the animal is not kosher. As long as you know, Arud is like a wild donkey. As long as you know the muscle tone, right, of a wild donkey. So the Gemara says, Lav Amrit Ika Arud Ika Nami Mina Achrina. But once he's saying that there's the wild donkey that has this crisscross muscle tone, so don't you have to be concerned for other animals as well? To which the Gemara says, Gemiri Deleka. We have a Mesorah that only kosher animals have the Shesi V'Ariv arrangement of muscle. Other animals do not, with the exception of the wild donkey. So as long as you know what a wild donkey looks like, you're good to go. V'Heicha Badik, I'll say, where am I checking for this crisscross muscle formation? Om Rabbi V'Tim Rav Chista, B'Kanfia Ukatz. We'll say, in the flanks of the tail. So you check the flanks of the tail. If the muscle tone is crisscross, then Halacha L'Maisa, again, the animal is kosher. If not, the animal is Timea. Beautiful. Simani Chaya. So if you remember again, the Mishnah said, Simani Behema. The Mishnah said, Simani Behema V'Chaya. Right? Nemru Min HaTorah. The Simanim of a kosher, Behema and Chaya. So remember again, Behema is a domestic animal. Chaya is a non-domestic animal. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanon, Eilu Simani Chaya. Chaya Bichla Behema Hi. The Simanim. So we'll say, what does this mean? What do you mean these are the simanim of a behema and a chaya? Both say, for simanim purposes, Behema and Chaya are the same category, right? There's no different. Behema and Chaya not reckoned differently for Simanim. So why are you mentioning the way the Mishnah reads is strange. To, right? Simani Behema v'Chaya Nerum and Torah. The Simanim of a Behema and a Chaya mentioned Torah. Which we'll say what it sounds like is that Behema have one set of Simanim, Chaya have a different set of Simanim. But the Simanim for a Chaya and Behema, what's in other words, split hooves. Chewing its gut are the same for behemoths and chayas. What does it mean? I'm Rabbi Zera. No. Chaya is something different. I'm a base. Lahatir chelba. I will say, the reason why simanim are important by a chaya are to ultimately, again, permit the chalev. I will say, the halacha is, the prohibition to consume chalev is a din in behema, not a din in chaya. You are permitted to consume the chalev of a chaya. So I will say, when we speak about the simanim of a chaya, what we're saying is, what type of simanim does an animal need in order to be able to eat its chaylev? If it's a chaya, so we'll say kosher chaylev is any chaya that has split hooves and chews its cud. So what we're essentially saying over here is, the simanim of a behema and chaya are necessary to permit its consumption, but by chaya, those simanim have another purpose, which is to tell you that not only is the meat permitted for consumption, but what? The chaylev is permitted for consumption as well. So the Gemara says, this is what it means to say, Elu simani chaya shechel b'motor. These are the simanim of a chaya that ultimately, again, allow you to consume its chelev. Now, as we're going to see right now, chaya does have additional simanim. How do you know that this is the type of chaya and that its chelev is going to be permitted? So, of course, split hooves and chewing its cud is the beginning. But as we're going to see now, there are also additional simanim. Here we go. Koshi yeshbo. Karnayim utalafayim. Any chaya that has horns and split hooves. Right? It's got to have horns. If it has horns, then it's a chaya whose chelev is permitted. Rabbi Dosa Omer Yeshla Karnayim. Rabbi Dosa says that it has to have horns. So Gemara says, if it has horns, Yeshla Karnayim, Iya Tatsarach Lachsur Ala Talfayim. Right? If it has horns, Rabbi Osai, then you know for sure that what? That it has split hooves. Yeshla Talfayim, but if it has split hooves, Tsarach Ata Lachsur Al Karnayim. You still have to check ultimately that it has horns. The keresh. They both say, what about a keresh? We're going to discuss. The keresh is a specific type of animal, which we will discuss. When it comes to the keresh, afa pi she'ein lo ela keren achos. Even though it has only one horn, mutter. Again, we'll discuss what the keresh is in just a little bit. So the Gemara says, klalahu, is this true? Meaning, is this statement that you just made, is this a general principle that applies to all cases? After all, bahari a's. They both say, look at the a's, right? The a's is the goat, the yesh lo karnayim, utalfayim, right? Rabbi said, the ease is an animal that has horns, and it has split hooves, the chelbo aser. Yet its chelev is going to be aser. Rabbi said, now why is the chelev of an ease aser? Because an ease is categorized as a behema and not as a chaya. So Rabbi said, so the Gemara says over here, you're telling me that any animal ultimately, again, that has horns and split hooves is considered to be a chaya whose chelev is permitted, yet an aes has horns and split hooves, but yet its chelev is aser as it is categorized as a behemoth, to which the Gemara says, kruchos ba'inam, because we will say, ultimately, again, you need layered horns. So we'll say, in the horn world, apparently, again, there's more like smooth horns and there's layered horns. In order, ultimately, again, for the chaya to be, or for the animal to be considered a chaya, the horns themselves must be layered. Ay, bahari shar, the kruchos, the chelba aser. But a shar, right, an axe, has layered horns, but yet its chelev is aser. To which the Gemara says, now it doesn't have to be layered, but what? Charukos bo'inan. It also has to be grooved. Okay. Bahari ace, back to ace. The charukos, the chelba aser. They will say, by an ace, ultimately, again, the horns are grooved. But lemais, again, by an ace, the chilev is the loser. Mifutsalos. They will say, they have to branch out. Right? They have to be branched. Right? So we'll say, and therefore, again, by the ace, they're not branched. I have a hari tzvi. But what about the deer? They will say, the ain mifutsalos. Yet by a deer, which is a chaya, the horns are not branched. The chelbo mutter. Ultimately, again, the chilev is mutter. You're right, they don't have to be branched. Rather, chadudos. They have to be rounded. Helchoch, hecha de miftsala, lo dina, velo dina. Hecha, so also listen to this. Therefore, when the branches are miftsala. So we'll say, when the horns lift, so we'll say means they're branched, right? When the horns are branched, lo dina v'lo dina. Look at Rashi just a moment. Hecha de mitzvah lo dina v'lo dina. Kilomar ein laharher v'lachzor achar simen achar. Shein pitzul b'karni behema. So we'll say, when the horns are branched, that is a definitive sign that this animal is a kosher chaya. Right? And therefore, again, you can eat the chaylev and no further investigation is necessary. Hecha de lo mitzvah. Now we'll say, where the horns are not branched, ba'inon kruchos, chaduros v'charukos. Then I will say, in that case, the horns must satisfy three criteria. They must be layered, they must be rounded, right? And they must be rounded. So the Gemara says, and they must be grooved. I'm sorry. They must be layered, grooved, and rounded. V'hu demivla chirakaihu. I will say, but that's only true of what? When we talk about the grooves, look at Rashi. Demivla chirakaihu, Rashi says, that's only where the grooves ultimately lead one into the other. This is the issue that came up with the A's, with the goat of Karkus. A Karkus goat, a Karkus A's. What was the issue with the Karkus A's? So listen to this. It was a Karkus is a place. So there was an issue with the A's of Karkus. Hai is a Karkus. Because we'll say there was this ace, there was this goat, this Karkusian goat. And what happens? The Akar, so I'm sorry, Hayi Izeh the Karkus, the Havi Beresh Kalusa. The Akar, Mali Tsana de Tarba Mineh. They shechted it, and they got a basket full of chaylev from it. A lot of chaylev from this Karkusian goat. So we'll say, now what's the Shaila? The shayla is this Karkusian goat a behema or is it a chaya? So Rav Achai Aser. Rav Achai said ultimately again, you cannot go ahead and eat from it. Rav Shua Barid Rav Yavo, Amar Achol Mine. Sorry. Rav Shua Barid Rav Yavo, Achol Mine. Rav Shua Barid Rav Yavo ate from it. He himself ate from it. Paskin that this Karkusian goat had the status of a chaya and therefore its chayla was mutter. Kari Anafshe. He said, so Rav Shmuel Bered Rav Yavo said about himself, Mipri pi'ish tisba bitno. We'll say, literally translated, from the fruit of the mouth of a person, you shall satiate your soul. So we'll say what he was ultimately saying was, because I'm a good Talmud, and I listened to my Rebbe, I heard from my Rebbe that the Karkusian goat is a chaya, and therefore its chaylev is mutter, and as a result of the fact that I paid attention in shir, my belly is full. Right? Sometimes it pays to pay attention. Shalchumitam hilchosakavase de Shmuel Bered Rav Yavo. So we'll say they paskin that the halacha follows Shmuel Bered Rav Yavo, the Karkusian goat is a chaya, and therefore it's chilev is muta. However, hizaru b'rabbeinu achai shemeir ene golu. But be respectful of Rav Achai, even though we don't paskin like Rav Achai. Right? Even though we paskin that the chaylev is mutter, be careful with Rav Achai who paskin that it's mutter. Be respectful of him, even though we don't adopt his decision. Why? Because he is the light of our eyes in the diaspora. Even though we don't paskin like Rav Achai over here, nevertheless, what? Rashi says, he's Rav Rabbeinu Achai, lino bo kavod, v'lidon lefanav ke'alacha, achi yachzer bo, v'lo la'atira befanav mashu osir. What they were saying is, be respectful of Rav Achai, and literally, Do not go ahead and paskin against him in his presence. In his presence, exhibit derech eretz, right? Why? Because he is the light of our eyes. He's one of the gedolei hadar. So you know, don't pass like him in this situation. Conduct yourself with respect in this sense. We'll say such, by the way, an incredible insight out as to how to disagree agreeably. We'll say that you can have differences of opinion, sharp differences of opinion, but sharp differences of opinion never allow us to compromise someone else's covet and dignity. The halacha is not like Rav Achai. It's not like him. But yet, the Rabbanan are saying, but when you're in his presence, treat him with respect. Not only because he's the God Ladar, also because he's a human being. I will say this, we don't have to get into this, but this is something clearly that has been lost in contemporary society. The ability to disagree with another human being respectfully and agreeably, everyone has lost this art form. Jose, but this is one of the things. Disagreeing with people is in our you know, in our DNA, right? We argue about anything and everything. We disagree about anything and everything. But our avodah is to always do that with incredible respect. The Gemara goes weiter. Am Rav Yehuda, keresh tivya debei iloi. So let's listen to this. So the Gemara says over here, if you look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Debei iloi shem yar, shem yar." So listen to this. I'm sorry. V'keresh ava b'shein lo ela kerenach. So remember again, the Mishnah said that the keresh, even though it only has one horn, ultimately again it is mutter. So the Gemara says, "What's the keresh?" Amar Yehuda, keresh tivya debei iloi. What's the keresh? The keresh is a deer of bei iloi. So Rashi says keresh is a particular type of deer that only had one horn. It specifically refers to the deer of Bei Iloi. So Tigris, we're going to talk about different kinds of unique animals. Tigris is Aryeh de Bei Iloi. We'll say the Tigris is the lion that comes from Bei Iloi. Amrav Kahana, Teisha Am Sahabi Bein Una Luuna de Aryeh de Bei Iloi. We'll say there are ultimately, there are nine Amis between one ear and the other ear of the lion that comes from Bei Iloi. We'll say, that's a pretty big lion, right? Nine amas between one and the other. So obviously, it's a bit hyperbolic, but the idea is saying that the lion that comes from Bei Iloi was fierce. Fierce. I'm Rav Yosef. Shisser amsa havi mishcha de tavi de Bei Iloi. Rav Yosef says, this keresh animal, which we identify as the deer that comes from Bei Iloi, it is 16 amas in length. We'll say 6 amas. We'll say, just understand, 16 amas in length is like 42 feet. Right, it's 42 feet in length. That's how big this deer is. Rabbi Eloi Amar. So let's listen to this. Rabbi Eloi. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. The Tivi Debei Eloi. Amar leKeis Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya. Let's say the Caesar once said to Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya, Eloheichem ka'aryeh masil. Your God compares himself to a lion. Dechsev aryeh shag milo yira. The lion roars out. Who won't be afraid? So let's say the idea is Kadosh Baruch Hu is the lion who roars. So the Caesar said to Yoshua ben Chananya, your God calls himself a lion. But yet again, my Rabbu say, what's so great about a lion? Parsha katil aryeh. Ultimately, the strong warrior can kill a lion. So your God is calling himself a lion, yet what? A strong warrior has the ability to kill a lion. Amar leh, Lafkai aryeh masil, ka'aryeh de bei iloi masil. Our God is not compared to a regular lion. Our God is compared to the lion of bei iloi. I suppose to say that lion that's nine amas in between, one from one ear to the next. A huge, fierce lion that cannot be killed by anyone. Amar leh, ba'ina de michsisle. The Caesar said, I'd like to see that lion. Amar leh, lo matis chazisle. To which, Rabbi Yeshua Ben Chananya says to the Caesar, nope, can't see that, it's going to be too much for you. Amar leh ivra chazina. I'm the Caesar, and I want to see the lion. So it says, what happens? Boy rachami. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya davened, is'akem miduchtei. And sure enough, the lion of Bei Iloi began to make its way through to Rome. Ki ava marchik arba mea parsi. When it was 400 parsos, it was a very large distance. When it was 400 parsos away, so what happens? Nihem chad kala. It let out one roar. And once they throw that one roar, 400 parsos away, so what happens? Afilu kol ma'av, sorry, no, sorry. Nihem chad kala. Afilu kol ma'abarta v'shura deromi nafal. It will say, at a distance of 400 parsos, all of the pregnant women in Rome miscarried, and all of the walls fell down. So intense was that one roar from, let's say, 400 parsos is a massive distance. Rome shook. So what happens? The lion keeps coming close to Rome. Ademerachak tlas mea parsi. Let's say at a distance of 300 parsos, nihem kalachrina. The animal let out another roar. So what happens? So the Gemara says, nasar kivi vishine digavri. Let's say what happens? People's teeth fell out. Or the roar was so intense that it caused the teeth of people to fall out. Va'afu nafal mikorsei. Even the Caesar fell off his throne to the ground. La'ara. Amar leh, b'matusa minach, So the Sea says, Rabbi Shimon ben Hananya, please, can you please go ahead and daven for the lion of Beit Yehuda to go back home? So what happened? Barachame Alei, he davened Vahadar Leila Asrei. And ultimately, again, the lion returned back to its own. So what's the Ben Yoyada comments on this? That, of course, the lion is a metaphor. This whole thing is metaphorical for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Caesar feeling that because he has conquered so much, that he is stronger than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he said, let me meet this God who I have vanquished. Rabbi Shua ben Hananya gives him some level of encounter with God. And even that small level of encounter with God with the lion, at 400 parasols away, at 300 parasols away, shakes the Caesar to his core. Causes him to what? To fall off his throne. Of course, I will say, the metaphor for falling off his throne is that when in the presence of God, the Caesar cannot hold on to his autonomy, he cannot hold on to his authority, and he falls off of his throne. An incredible, incredible Gemara. We'll continue, Mir Hashem. We're going to do this tomorrow with the encounter between the Caesar and Rabbi Shimon ben Hananya. I'll share with you a short idea on the parasha.